For the Medical Journal of Australia, I'm Kate Swanell. Did you know that you can get on the internet here in Australia, pick any city in the US, and find out about every residential aged care facility in that town, including their ranking on a 5-star rating system for quality of care and staffing levels? Did you know that no such system exists for Australian aged care facilities? It is almost impossible to find out anything about the quality of care provided in an Australian RACF beyond the quality of the accommodation. In October 2019, the Royal Commission into Aged Care Quality and Safety asked Professor Kathy Egar, Director of the Australian Health Services Research Institute at the University of Wollongong, to do some research comparing staffing levels in Australian RACFs with those overseas. The results were, frankly, depressing and scary. Professor Egar and her colleagues have written a perspective for the MJA on this topic, and she is my special guest today. You've written this perspective. It is a fairly depressing picture you paint. Let's talk about the research, first of all, the hard numbers. What research did you do on behalf of, or as a result of what the Royal Commission was asking for? What did you come up with?
A really core feature of the Royal Commission was numerous submissions arguing that residential aged care is understaffed,
yep,
and that people are not getting the care that they need, that there was not just abuse but significant neglect,
yep,
through lack of care. So we were commissioned by the Royal Commission to look at the international evidence on the relationship between staffing and quality and safety, and to compare Australia against international benchmarks and standards used in other countries. First piece of that work involved an international literature review where we identified all the countries that had standards, and we then had to convince ourselves that the way they delivered care made it comparable.
Yep.
For example, we excluded New Zealand and the UK, which we would normally include because they still have a distinction between high care and low care.
Right.
And we had to just find those countries where we were genuinely comparing like with like. The US, Germany, Canada,
mm-hmm, yep,
were the ones that were really comparable. There were some others, but they were the major ones.
Yep.
And on all of those standards, in all of those countries, Australia does not meet any of the benchmarks. It also doesn't meet the benchmarks that are set down by the two states that mandate staff ratios for their own government nursing homes, which is Victoria and Queensland. And when
okay,
we looked at all the systems internationally, by far the best system was the US.
Which
and
is
the really depressing news is that on almost every health metric, Australia outperforms the US by a country mile. But in residential aged care, the US outperforms Australia by a long shot.
Let's talk a little bit about the rating system that you decided to use in the end to compare with Australia's system, or to apply to Australia's system. Tell us a little bit about that 5-star rating system.
So the Americans, through their Centers for Medicaid and Medicare, has a 5-star rating system that's called Nursing Home Compare. And you can go on to the Medicare website in the US and you can search and see 5-star ratings for the homes that are around you. So it's both a public system,
mm,
for public reporting. And staff hours is only one of the metrics in that. The other things that they report on through 5-stars is the results of inspections,
yes,
and also quality measures like adverse events. And we have recommended to the Royal Commission that they adopt that system with two changes. One is that they add allied health, because the American system only reports on registered nurses and nurse assistants and personal care workers, but
right,
not allied health. And this, and the other element we have suggested be added, is a measure of consumer or carer experience of care to really give a balanced scorecard.
What happened when you put that 5-star rating test against Australian nursing homes?
The way that the American system works is that there's a 50% loading for registered nurse hours,
mm-hmm,
and a 50% loading for other care hours. And the two messages were, we just scrape in as having adequate care in registered nurse hours, but our total care is really unacceptably low. We have 180 minutes of total care time per day in Australia, and that makes us one star in the American system. So it's one star in total care.
Yep.
And the minimum acceptable for that, by the way, is 215 minutes. And we just scrape into three stars with registered nursing. But because the two of them are then weighted equally, Australia is rated as two star. There's very strong evidence in the international literature that quality and safety in residential care is due, it's got four sort of big factors in it. One is the total staff levels. One is the staff mix. That is, you can have as many personal care workers as you like, but if you don't have enough registered nurses, allied health, etc., you're not going to get good quality and safety. The third element is continuity. If you're totally dependent on agency staff and you've got different people coming in every day who don't know the residents, you are more likely to have adverse events. And the last is clinical governance. And I think that's an area where, because aged care has been conceptualised as being a residential service rather than a health service, there's been not enough attention.
How many RACFs are there in Australia? Do we know?
About 2,500.
Okay. And how many, or what percentage of them did you find were five star?
So we've calculated it based on residents rather than facilities.
Mm-hmm.
58% of Australian residents are living in homes that would be classified as unacceptable. That is only one or two star.
Wow.
27% of residents are living in homes that we consider to be the barely acceptable level of three stars. 14% of residents are in homes that have got good staffing ratios. That's four stars. And only 1% of residents in Australia are in facilities that would be classified as five stars in the American system. And the Royal Commission heard that evidence in October last year.
Yes.
And in Senior Counsel's final submission to the Commission, they have recommended, that is, Senior Counsel has recommended, mandated minimum four stars for Australia. So what that means is that if all residents in Australia were to receive three-star care, you would have to increase staffing by 37%.
Yep.
In those facilities, currently only one or two-star, but that is equivalent to 20% of total staffing, and basically 80 to 90% of costs in residential care are in staff. So if it's 20% of staff, it's 20% of funding. Four-star requires a 37% increase in staffing, and five-star is a 49% increase in total staffing.
That's obviously a considerable cost to aged care managing companies. Is it time to shift this sector back to the government? Is it time to unprivatise it, if that's a word, deprivatise it?
I think there's a couple of issues. The first is to say, when the Aged Care Act was updated back in 1997, that is 23 years ago, the people in aged care are a very different cohort to the people who are in aged care now.
Yes.
And aged care was very much conceptualised as a lifestyle choice. There was a very strong argument at the time that the health system had been too institutional in its approach, and that what was needed was a much more engaged approach that was much more residential in feel and much more home-like, and where people felt that they were living in a home rather than living in an institution.
Are those two systems mutually exclusive though, Cathy?
No, they're not. And in fact, our MJA article, we conclude that you don't have to trade off a social model of care and a clinically competent model of care. And that's actually what's been happening. For the last 20 years, Australia has sat back while the sector and government has traded off clinical competency for socially engaged care. And I want to put that into the context of what does the average resident look like now?
Yes, compared to then, yeah.
Only 15% of people in residential aged care are independently mobile. And when I gave that figure at national conferences and, in fact, in presentations to the Department of Health, people were really surprised. They had no idea. 35% of people in residential aged care cannot wait there. They are permanently in bed. And 50% need another person, not just a stick or a frame to get around. They actually need 50% need physical assistance to get around, either because of their physical care needs or because of their dementia and their confusion and with behaviour disturbance. So that is a highly dependent population. This is not a lifestyle choice anymore to be in residential care.
No,
if you get
not.
To make a choice, you live at home. And the only reason you now go to residential aged care is because you can't be at home. So I think the implications are either, and they're probably both, we definitely need to invest more to improve the safety and quality of aged care. The government subsidy now being paid is not sufficient to pay for consistent 3- or 4-star care. The second issue is we actually do need a stronger clinical governance framework, and whether that is best achieved by transferring at least the residential aged care sector back into the health sector is a really important question for the Royal Commission. And if I can just give you an example of what that means, if we look at Newmarch, which is the residential aged care facility in Western Sydney that's had the massive outbreak of COVID-19, if that facility had been a hospital, we would have closed it and moved all the residents out, all the staff out, isolated everybody and deep cleaned it. But because it's considered to be their home, everybody's been left there. I would also make the point about the ageism inherent in this.
Yeah.
If Newmarch had been a boarding school, we would not have left it open.
No. I'm talking today with Professor Cathy Egar about the state of aged care in Australia. Her co-authored perspective can be found at mja.com.au. Did you know the MJA has a weekly online news magazine called Insight Plus? Every Monday, Insight Plus presents news and opinion pieces designed to complement MJA content and expand on current medical hot topics. Insight is free and totally open access, and no log-on is required. You can find it at Insight Plus, that's Insight, P-L-U-S, all one word, .mja.com.au. Back to our chat. It says so much about society, doesn't it? And where we need to shift our entire headspace about our elderly senior citizens, because we just let them down so badly over the last 20 years.
And so because we've got that culture, then it's also encouraged an aged care sector and an ownership model that puts emphasis on the residential component rather than the safe quality care component.
Yes. What's causing the understaffing, Cathy? Is it about, is there a shortage of people wanting to work in this sector? Is that because of wages? Is it because of conditions? What's the underlying mechanism of this understaffing?
There are a couple of issues. One is that the government subsidy for a day in residential care is about one third of what it costs to deliver a day of care in a subacute hospital.
So the owners, the corporations, the companies owning these things don't want too many staff in there because it just costs too
much.
They
can't afford.
Yeah.
They cannot afford the levels of staff that I believe they require. And when we have recommended that the minimum required is 215 minutes, I would compare that and point out that the average in subacute care, extended care facilities, rehab, palliative care, etc., across Australia is a minimum of 6 hours. So we're talking still about half. So there's a couple of issues. One's that. The second is we don't value aged care.
No.
And therefore we have not valued aged care nursing. And aged care nurses get paid less than registered nurses in a hospital. And personal care workers are paid so lowly, they need a very easy to acquire certificate.
Yep.
They're being paid less than if they worked in a supermarket. And you get what you pay for.
Oh, of course you do.
So I think there's a whole issue about the funding. Mm-hmm. The aged care sector is understaffed and it's underfunded.
Yeah.
And government really needs to commit to a funding, substantial funding increase, but with strings attached.
Yes.
There needs to be really stringent conditions put on that money to ensure that it's actually used to improve staffing ratios and staff mix in order to improve the quality and safety of care.
Are you hopeful, Cathy? Are you hopeful that the Commission will achieve what it's going to recommend? Is there a light at the end of this tunnel?
I think the tone and evidence in the interim report for the Royal Commission gives everybody great hope. The Royal Commission's interim report, which they called neglect.
Yes, yes.
Now, that title says it all. They have received literally thousands and thousands of submissions, and the top issues raised with them in residential care are around quality and safety.
Yep.
I would really love to see the Royal Commission frame reform around human rights.
Yep.
We do not have a human rights framework for residential care. It's very much the emphasis is on it being still a lifestyle choice with an emphasis on social models of care. But when 35% of people can't get out of bed, the idea that you're going to solely focus on wellness sounds really appealing on the surface, but those arguments have now become a justification to deliver inadequate care. I think the other comment I want to make is about end-of-life care.
Mm-hmm.
There are about 180,000 residential aged care beds in Australia.
Yes.
And about 240,000 people in them in any one year. In other words, about 60,000 people die in residential care each year and about another 60,000 take their place.
Yes.
One third. This is a cohort who on average will come into care now and life expectancy is about 2 years.
Yes.
And we need to really understand that residential aged care needs a much stronger focus on high quality end of life care than it can currently deliver with that staff level and that staff mix.
How do you see the GP situation here, Cathy? I mean, one of the problems at the moment is GPs don't have any incentive really to go to aged care facilities. Is that part of the solution, sorting that problem out?
I think it comes back to this idea that residential aged care is conceptualised as a person's home rather than a health facility.
Yeah.
And therefore it's up to each GP to sort out something that works for each patient. I don't think that there are incentives for the GPs, but I think the bigger issue is people in residential aged care are actually not living at home. And in many cases, they're not even living anywhere close to where their GP lives or works.
Yeah.
It works in a country town where you've been seeing your same GP for years and then you go to the residential aged care facility in your same town. But an average GP outside the country town situation might have patients who are now in 20 or 30 homes.
Scattered around the region, yeah.
So the idea that fee-for-service GPs can go in and be the major provider of healthcare into the future, I think is also not a viable option. And I actually also think very strongly that people in residential aged care have a right to medical specialist care and also to substantially more allied health than they're getting.
Yeah.
For example, I think there should be pharmacists working in residential aged care. I think there should be podiatrists working in residential aged care.
Yes.
And there should be a dental service. And yet the assumption is that you'll go and jump in the car and someone will take you and you'll go to the dentist or go to the podiatrist or go and see a pharmacist. And that was fine when the Act was drafted up 23 years ago. But that is not the future of aged care. The residential component is going to become increasingly end-of-life care.
So if you had a magic wand, Cathy, what would you do right now?
What I would do is I would look at much stronger integration of aged care and healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
I would conceptualise aged care as having five components, each of which are equally important. One is good quality healthcare. One is good quality social care. One is good quality functional care, so a focus on abilities to manage activities of daily living, which is a much stronger focus on rehabilitation than people are getting now. One element is residential care, and the final element is good quality end-of-life care. And that's a different idea than seeing it as a residential service with a focus on reablement and social engagement. Mm. As important as they are, only a very small proportion of people in residential aged care can have their needs met solely by that.
Do we die in residential aged care facilities, or do we get shipped off to a hospital?
We do not know, and that's the other failing in the system at the moment, is good quality data collection. It is impossible to know for sure how many people die actually in their residential care facility versus how many go to hospital. And the data collection systems are not up to it, and there is work in progress that we are involved with, working with the Australian Bureau of Census and Statistics, to actually introduce a classification system of where people die so that we will start to answer that question. But what we do know anecdotally is that there are a sizable number of people who have an ambulance called for them and who die in the ambulance, in the emergency department, or after just a few days on a ward. And nothing, I think, could be worse than ending your last few hours of your life in an ambulance called by the residential aged care facility or your family because they're not confident about you dying there. And every home should be able to provide high-quality end-of-life care.
If you were in this situation now, would you put yourself or your loved one in a residential aged care facility, or would you do everything you could to keep them home?
I would do both.
Yes.
Everybody is doing everything they can to avoid residential aged care.
Yes.
And that's both a general social norm that was happening prior to the Royal Commission. There is better community care. There's more opportunities now for retirement living and other sort of, accommodation options, etc.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And social mores have changed. Mm. People used to literally sell their house and move to a nursing home as a lifestyle choice 30 years ago. Nobody does that anymore. On the other hand, we need to accept that there are two reasons you'll go to residential care. One is because you have developed dementia. And there are estimates that about 50% of people now in residential aged care have dementia with cognitive disturbance, behavioural disturbance and physical dependencies due to that dementia. And the second is because of frailty. And we need to keep reminding everybody that you don't go to aged care because you're old. You go to aged care because you've got health conditions that need managing. And that's what makes the aged care system different from the disability system.
Is there a way Australians can find out how good the nursing homes in their area are?
No, not at present. If you try and find out at the moment, the most you'll be able to tell, and we've heard people say this, is I've tried to find out about the quality and safety of the care homes around me, and all of the emphasis was about how nice the foyer looked.
Yes.
And about being shown around and shown the physical layout of the home.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And that's why our recommendation to the Royal Commission is that we do need a public reporting system equivalent to Nursing Home Compare in the US. It is crazy that I can log on to the Nursing Home Compare website from Wollongong and I can rate all the nursing homes in Hawaii, but I can't rate the nursing homes in the Illawarra.
That's nuts. Wow. There's so much work to do.
And that rating needs to be not just on the care as a residence, but also in terms of quality and safety and staffing.
There's so much work to do in this. It's kind of daunting, isn't it? Well, I don't know. Is it?
Yeah. I mean, it's huge. I'm professor of health services research.
Yes.
And so I do research into how the health system works and how to improve it.
Yep.
And I have to say, I have been totally horrified.
Yeah.
I mean, I think for the average consumer, this is very scary stuff.
Yeah.
I would, if I had no choice, place one of my family in residential aged care, for example, if they developed a severe dementia. I'm lucky. I've got a high level of health literacy,
yep,
enough that I could actually make some informed choices. But even with someone like me who knows the system really well, I cannot see how somebody from outside that system can ever work out how it works. And I think what we've seen at Newmarch, without getting into the specifics of that case,
but I
do think that what that case has illustrated is the enormous sense of being powerless,
yes,
that the families have been
exactly
talking about, that they have no idea what's going on. They don't feel that they're in control. But I guess the question about that is, well, who is,
yes,
when you think about aged care as a residential service rather than a health service? One of the things I think that has to come out of the Royal Commission is a new Aged Care Act.
Yes.
I think that is really fundamental, and that new Aged Care Act has a much stronger focus on clinical standards and safety,
mm-hmm,
than the current Act, and that has much stronger accountabilities for the funding. And I do believe that residential aged care clinical staffing is not sufficient, and I don't believe that they can increase staffing to a satisfactory level within their current budget. That said, I think there should be a national change of policy that says you can make profit on the residential component, you can make profit on all sorts of others, but in relation to the actual clinical, the money you get for clinical care or for health, the actual care component,
mm-hmm,
that money actually has to be spent on care. You cannot make profit on the care component, but you can make profit if, you know, you want to provide a higher level of standard for accommodation and,
yeah,
somebody wants to pay for it. I have no problem with that.
Yeah.
What I have a problem with is having legislation that allows you to make a large profit on the care component,
mm,
when the care component is meant to be spent on care. I think the Royal Commission will get it right.
Yes.
I think the problem now is that we've now got, you know, we're now living in the middle of the first pandemic of our lifetime,
mm-hmm,
and there's going to be so many competing demands, and I think there's a real risk for aged care that it just gets lost because it's out of sight, out of mind. The medical profession really needs to step up, because the medical profession has largely been quiet about aged care,
mm,
because,
yes,
they haven't seen it as a health service. And,
yep,
the medical profession now needs to step up and really ensure that aged care needs are not lost in the period after, you know, post-management of the pandemic. There'll,
yeah,
be lots and lots of people having lots of different needs, and it will be very easy for aged care to be lost in that. But it's really important it isn't.
Kathy, thank you for your time. It's a really
important topic. Okay, thank you.
See you. Bye. My thanks to my special guest today. Don't forget that all our podcasts are open access and available at www.mja.com.au/podcasts. Or you can subscribe to our feed at iTunes. My name's Kate Swanell, and we'll see you next time.